Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. In October, astronauts Jessica Meir and Christina Cook made space exploration history. The two conducted the first all-female spacewalk outside the International Space Station, replacing a battery charge-discharge unit. Meir is a native of Caribou, Maine, and former assistant professor of anesthesia at Harvard Medical School, and she is a flight engineer on the mission. Earlier today, she called us on Radio Boston from the International Space Station. Yes, she called us from space.
Please stand by for a voice check from WBUR.
Station, this is WBUR. How do you hear me?
I have you loud and clear. How me?
Jessica, thanks for joining Radio Boston from the International Space Station. I know you're really busy, so I'm going to jump right in. A couple of weeks ago, you and Christina Cook completed the first all-female spacewalk outside the International Space Station. Can you take us through how it felt stepping out for the first time?
It was simply an incredible experience and one that I will never forget. For me, coming up here, it just was the most amazing experience of my life coming to the International Space Station, something that I had dreamed about since I was a kid. And let me tell you, I thought it would be amazing. I knew it would be amazing. It is even far, far, far more incredible and impressive than I ever imagined. And that's saying a lot. Going for a spacewalk was even taking it a step further. When you come out of that hatch and you look down and all you see are your boots and the earth below you in all of its beauty, it is really an awe-inspiring and humbling experience, and it was just something that I really never forget.
I have to tell you, to the average person, it seems like it would be terrifying to be out there in the middle of nothing with a single tether. What does it physically feel like when you're out there?
Well, one of the things, and I think it's a very useful aspect of our training, we have such an amazing training regime for our spacewalks and spacesuits down in Houston in the Neutral Buoyancy Lab, the big pool where we conduct all of that training. So we have so much muscle memory in terms of how we maneuver around in the suit, the different switches that we have to throw for our life support system, all of the different tools that we use to accomplish the job. So one of the things, when you come out the door that first time, of course, there are so many different thoughts going in your head. But the biggest one, I think, that's very common for most people in my office is, okay, I need to get this job done, not make any mistakes, rely on my training and do what I need to do. So luckily, because you have all of that training really ingrained in you, all of that muscle memory, you just start doing your job. And sometimes we actually have to remind ourselves to take a moment to look back at the Earth, to appreciate the magnitude of the beauty around us and what we are actually doing, because it's very easy to just get caught up in that job that we're very, very used to performing. People have very different emotions when they come out for the first time, so I didn't know what to expect. I didn't have that fear of falling, which a few people have said, or I wasn't scared. I actually just felt incredibly inspired, and looking back at the beauty of the Earth, just incredibly fortunate to have that opportunity.
Jessica, I can see you, and I have to tell our listeners, you look like you're having a blast. Are you having the time of your life up there?
Absolutely. I'm not sure that I've smiled this much for a month consecutively in my life. And I've described it in recent interviews, and even in the one that I just had, how it does almost take you back a little bit to your childhood. You know, I personally probably act that way all the time, but you can see it in all of our crewmates where, you know, you'll just be doing your average task and all of a sudden you maybe curl up a little bit, float around, and you just kind of do that because you can. And it brings this kind of childhood excitement, you know, just spinning around for a while for no good reason, because without gravity, things are a lot more entertaining.
You actually have mentioned a couple of times that this was a childhood dream. And according to the Press Herald, you actually wrote in your high school yearbook that your future plan was to go for a spacewalk. Did you really think this was going to happen one day? Have you been sort of single-minded about this from the beginning?
It certainly was my dream the entire way, but I think I also always knew that there was such a small chance of it happening that I didn't think that it necessarily would. And I think that's true for all of us that are fortunate enough to end up in this position. We know that there are so many other people that are equally as qualified, would make great astronauts, but unfortunately, you know, there just aren't enough spots for everybody, and there's a lot of luck involved, so all of us recognize that.
Let's talk about the science of your mission for a minute. I understand that a big part of it is making repairs or improvements to the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer, which is looking for evidence of dark matter, which I just have to say is so cool for us non-astronauts. Can you give us a sense? What is that? What is the alpha magnetic spectrometer, and why is it important to the future of space exploration?
Yeah, the AMS is a very, very cool instrument, the alpha magnetic spectrometer, as you mentioned, and it is probably, understanding everything about it is a little bit beyond my capacity as a physiologist, but not a physicist, but it is amazing. So it is collecting all of this high energy radiation that is coming from everywhere around it. And so it's looking at these high energy particles, looking for evidence, as you mentioned, of dark matter, of antimatter. So it will... It already is telling us a lot about that environment, about all of those particles, about things like the origins of the universe. I think it's already spawned maybe thousands of scientific publications already. So really cutting edge astrophysics type stuff. So this spectrometer, though, unfortunately, it's mounted on the outside of the space station. So it actually doesn't have any interface with us as crew members. It is just out there collecting that radiation, collecting those high energy particles, doing its job. It was never designed to be serviced by spacewalks. We weren't supposed to have to do anything to it. But unfortunately, one of the pumps in the thermal control system has failed. And so in order to maintain this instrument and to have it keep collecting its valuable scientific data, we have to do a series of spacewalks, which are coming right around the corner, to go out and fix it. They'll be very, very interesting spacewalks, because we had to actually at NASA design all kinds of new tools in order to fix this. As I mentioned, it wasn't designed with spacesuit interfaces. When we go out the door to fix something in a spacesuit, we use special tools, things that, you know, you don't just have the same dexterity that you do in an ungloved hand. So the engineers at NASA have designed these special tools, have flown them up there, and we're preparing for those spacewalks now. So hopefully we'll be able to repair AMS successfully, so we can keep getting data. I won't be doing those spacewalks. I'll actually be on the inside of the space station, flying the astronauts around on the robotic arm, the Canada arm that we use to capture visiting vehicles. We actually are about to depart to release a visiting vehicle right after this event with the robotic arm. And so I will be flying the astronauts around as they repair the AMS.
So, Jessica, there's no glass ceiling in space, but you and Christina Cook broke one anyway. Do you ever think about things like that? Do you think about your history and your place in it?
You know, it's not something that I came into this job thinking about. For me, this was always my dream. My previous work led to everything to get me here. And so a lot of it is just doing what we're trained to do. You know, we came into the office and we were treated like everybody else. Christina and I were treated the same as our male colleagues. Interestingly, our class was the first time that we had 50% female and 50% males. So we really already felt equal. We were held to the same standard. We received the same training. So for us, going out of the door that day to do that spacewalk, it was really just doing our job, doing what we were trained to do. At the same time, it is not lost on us that it is a special event. It is a historical event. And for me, I think it's just really awe-inspiring to see that it's just becoming a regular event. It just makes sense. We've actually had a continuous female presence on the space station now for quite a while, and that just reflects how far we've come in society. We have more women in all of the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, math. So it just makes sense that we're starting to see equal representation on all fronts. And I think that's very exciting and hopefully inspiring for everybody that hopes to follow.
Jessica, what is your vision for the future of space exploration?
Well, right now, I think it's an amazing accomplishment that we've had this continuous presence on the International Space Station for almost 20 years. If you think about that, kids these days, or they're not even kids anymore, that are 19 years old, almost 20 years old, have never been alive when we didn't have a continuous human presence up here. So I think we are doing the right thing by maintaining our presence in space. We are also doing the right thing by maintaining our international partnerships and realizing that things are done better when we have a diverse and international team. We're up here every day working with our Russian counterparts. We have an Italian crew member up here from the European Space Agency. We often have Japanese and Canadian astronauts. And that really shows how well you can do a job when you bring all of these teams together. So I think personally we need to continue with that trajectory, and we are, for our future planning. The next thing you need when you're thinking about the future of spaceflight is, what's that next step? What are we going to do after this? We want to continue to progress and advance, and our administration has announced that we will be going back to the moon on our journey to Mars. So that's exactly what we should be doing, keeping that vision moving forward. I also am very excited and encouraged by the fact that we are continuing these partnerships and expanding to include commercial companies, these partnerships that we have with companies like SpaceX, like Boeing, Northrop Grumman for resupply vehicles are all only making us stronger because we're bringing different pieces of technology and expertise. And I think we've realized now as a government, no one government can really do this alone with the scale of what we're trying to accomplish in space. But by combining all of these entities together, we can get the job done.
Jessica, thank you so much for joining us. We hope to talk to you again once you're back on the ground. In the meantime, stay safe.
Okay, thank you very much, and please give my best to everybody in Boston. Take care.
Thank you to all participants from WABI and WBUR station. We are now resuming operational audio communications.
So cool. All right, so the International Space Station is very far away. We are still waiting for video, understandably, from NASA. But when it gets here, you will find it on our website, radioboston.org. That is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, Jamie Bologna, and Walter Withman. Tim Skog is our technical director, with help today from Max Liebman. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi, and I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.